the Award Podcast is brought to you by Naked City Brewery.
Hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 215 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks. Yes, indeed. It's going to be a great show. Going to be a great show this week, guys. Going up on Tuesday. You know that when that happens, Aaron must have been hungover on a Sunday. Yes, that's right. That's right. Your assumptions are correct, people. I was very hungover yesterday and just could not bring myself to do this work. Because, you know, you may think it's a podcast. It's easy. You just put it out and you do it. And, you know, not so much. Plus, I had another interview yesterday, and now, you know, it was a long day, folks. It was a long day. But we're here now, and everything's going to be great. Special guest this week, Ian Carmel. You may know him from the televisions. He's been on Chelsea Lately, was recently on Conan. Yeah, that's right, Conan. Just a super, super funny dude, and a great guy as well, man. Super down to earth and willing to chat. So we'll get to that in a moment. By the way, this interview was just fraught with disaster. I mean, it couldn't have, like, the odds were stacked against us, folks. Let me tell you, the odds were stacked against me and Ian to get this interview. And boy, let me tell you. Man, everything that could possibly go wrong went wrong on this one. First of all, Ian was a little late. He was almost an hour late. But you know what? Not his fault. Some stuff went down. He had to take care of. That's fine. I just waited. I waited patiently, and then we started talking. He was such a great guy, and very, very nice. And then we start talking. And at one point, he was like, "Hey, we should close this door because, the other comedians were getting started and we were in the green room and he wanted to close the door. So our sound quality, he was thinking about me. He was thinking about the show and the quality of the interview and he wanted to close the door. So he got up, I pressed pause. He got up to close the door, comes back, sits down. We have a fucking fantastic conversation for about 7 minutes. When I finally look down at the recorder and notice that I did not press record again. So there you go. 7 minutes of awesome, fantastic conversation. Totally gone and lost to the ether. And then, oh, God, we get to talking again. We have some more great conversation. And bam, he's got to get up. And we went too long. He's got to get up and do his set. It was fun. It was fun, though. It was fun. I'll tell you what, doing this show, learning a lot every day, learning a lot about how to press a button and make sure things are running. Actually, not learning that at all. Yeah. Let's get down to it, shall we? Folks, we've got a wonderful email here from listener Jeff, who apparently just started listening to the show. So, Jeff, if you're listening again, thank you so much, sir. He sent us just a fantastic email, which you can do as well, by the way, if you want to reach out. You can email me, aaron@air-raid.net. That's aaron@air-raid.net. And tell us what you think, man. You can send hate mail, too. We get that from time to time about how much people hate my interviews. But this one was great. This one was wonderful. concerning the Jen Ghetto episode from last week. Was that last week? Yeah, I think so. Jeff writes, what a great show, Aaron. Ah, thank you. Thank you, Jeff. That chick is the real deal, speaking of Jen Ghetto. Was she this awesome before Chris Walla? Because if so, she is going to be huge. I would agree with you, sir. And yes, she was that awesome before Cool Choices, which is out now, by the way. There are very few artists who can affect me strongly upon first hearing them. She has everything a good artist should have: awareness, depth, and powerful emotional presence. I hope she can reach a lot of people. I can't be the only brokenhearted person who feels her music so deeply. Thanks for having her on and having such a thoughtful and substantive discussion. I will definitely keep listening. Thank you, Sir Jeff. Jeff, I believe, is located in Tacoma, right? Is that right, Jeff? I hope so. I hope I got that right. Anyway, thank you so much for listening, Jeff. That's fantastic, my friend. Yeah, like I said, you can email us as well at aaron@air-raid.net if you have anything you want to tell us, like that one. We love reading great, great emails like that, so thank you so much. Also, this other thing. This came up, and I've been meaning to address this for a little while. We got, a month ago, 2 months ago, something like that. Emails started pouring in. I got like 50 emails. Nah, that's a lie. That's a lie. It wasn't 50. It was like maybe 20. Yeah, something like that. Cut that in half, Aaron. You don't have to lie to make friends here. Come on. We got about 20 emails from listeners around the country saying that there was a new podcast out there, and I don't know how these people found it, but there's a new podcast out there called the Air Raid Network. Which obviously has some problems for us, right? as you can most likely see. The Air Raid Network. So this thing started up, and I looked at this and I was like, oh my God, because a lot of things were very, very similar, including their tagline, which was, let me find this, dropping audio bombs on the masses. That was it, that was their tagline. Mine, of course, is dropping the show that drops bombs of awesome into your ear holes. And so I was like, oh, man, okay. Well, that's super similar. And if people are searching for my show, they may come up with that show because it's Air Raid. There's this Air Raid Network, right? We're airraid.net. I mean, there's a lot of similarities there. So I wrote them an email. And you know what? I tried to be very nice in it, right? I didn't want to be forceful. I didn't want to, like, you know, have any bad blood about it, but I asked them nicely to change their name. They only had one show up, so I was like, you might want to change this. And if people are searching for your show, they're going to come up with my show, you know, and vice versa. It's just not going to work out, right? And they emailed me back, and they were awesome. Daniel and Dave, who started this podcast. They had done a podcast before. They just started this thing, and they were so apologetic and so open to the idea of changing it that it was just fantastic. And I immediately felt like a fucking horrible, horrible asshole after all this went down because they were so nice. I was like expecting the worst. I was expecting them to just be like, hey, fuck you, man. Go suck your own cock because, we're doing this, right? We came up with the graphics. We got it up on iTunes and everything like that. We're not changing it now, but they were awesome. And they went ahead and, changed it. And now, they are doing the Super Rich Kids Present, which you can find at the superrichkids.podbean.com. And also on Twitter at Rich Kids Podcast, and on iTunes as well. And it's good product, so you guys should go and check it out. And they're great guys, David and Daniel, doing it, I think, out of like Cleveland or something like that. So good stuff. Another podcast to add to your repertoire. Right, there you go. Yeah. The Super Rich Kids Present. Go and check it out. Great dudes, David and Daniel. And if you guys are listening, thank you so much for being awesome. Because I totally felt like a horrible dick. Torrible dick. That's what I felt like. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I can't get this. I smell like this frickin' sandwich that I just ate. I had a meeting down at this this bar with a friend of mine and amazing, amazing music producer, Eric Blood. And he's going to be starting a show here pretty soon. We're going to tell you guys all about it. But I ate this sandwich, and now I got the smell of this sandwich all over my body. I can't. It's on my shirt. I didn't even spill anything. It's like, fuck. It was an amazing sandwich. But let me tell you, people, God, you get that smell on you. You can't get it off. It's like on my nose or something or on my upper lip. I know that's gross, but yeah. Ugh, God, damn it. It was a great sandwich, but I don't know if I want to be smelling it all night. Ah, yeah, you know, that's how things go, right? Hey, we get sponsorship by the wonderful people at Naked City Brewing and Tap House here in Seattle, Washington. Wonderful, wonderful place, people. Have you had their beer yet? It's amazing. It's amazing. And you know what? Well, one of these things that they're doing there, they're doing the Naked Sessions with the TV show Band in Seattle right there in the screening room where we did our live show. And coming up next, October 25th, Tomo Nakayama, who has been on this show before, is going to be playing and singing some songs, playing some music, and telling stories behind the music, right? It's a great idea, right? The Naked Sessions, October 24th, 8 p.m., $10 at brownpapertickets.com. Man, I am having trouble talking right now. But go and check it out. Go check them out on the web, nakedcitybrewing.com, and you can click the link there to buy the tickets and go to the show, people. That's right. Yes. Wonderful people there at Naked City Brewery and Tap House, and they help us keep the lights on, so please help them out by liking them on Facebook and telling them that you found out about them right here on the Air Raid Podcast, because then that helps us out as well, right? Yeah, pays for stuff. We need to pay for stuff, people. We're trying to work up the funds to do a new website for you, get some new graphics on there, and maybe even make some new t-shirts, you know? And also soundproof this fucking studio because this echo is really getting on my nerves. All right. Did I ramble enough? Yes, I did. This is what we're going to do. We're going to go with our first musical break. And we're going to feature music this week from one of my favorite bands, The Laws. I believe they're out of San Francisco. No longer a band, but man, they are fantastic. They are so fantastic. Everybody knows their song. Everybody knows the song, what is it? There She Goes, right? Everybody knows that one. But maybe these you don't know. Maybe some of these you don't know. How about Son of a Gun by The Laws off of their self-titled album, The Laws. Okay, Son of a Gun, The Laws, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Ian Carmel. It's you guys are going to love this. You're going to love it. All right. The Laws. We'll be right back in just a moment. Hang with us. All he's doing is moving in hotels and scooping up lots of wine. That was once a boy of life who left out. Check. Yeah, yeah. You'll have to kind of hold it right to your face hole.
Oh, cool.
There. The stands are just for looks.
Just for show.
Nice stand, though.
Isn't that nice? Yeah, well, they just kind of dangle right there. Yeah.
They
yeah.
Like a B movie spaceship.
right. You into B movies?
I'm not.
You got some favorites?
I'm not. I don't.
No?
I don't want, like, especially in the last, I mean, I've done, like, I really kind of get completely consumed by comedy.
Yeah?
Ever since I started doing improv, like, God, I've been stand up 5 years, so probably like 8-9 years ago. Like,
really?
As soon, yeah. Like, I wasn't really, like, I loved comedy growing up and everything. And I'd watch it, but it never seemed like a thing you could do. And as soon as I took, like, that very first improv class, it, like, sunk its teeth in completely.
Yeah, yeah.
And then...
Well, there's kind of an interesting story behind that, too, right? You just ended up taking a class...
Yeah.
At, where would you go?
Portland State University.
Okay.
And I...
From your uncle?
From my uncle, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, you know. He just retired this last spring.
Yeah?
He taught theater and improv and a few other classes here and there at Portland State. I was going to Portland State, and I needed an arts credit.
Right, right.
To graduate, I was studying political science, and I was like, oh, wait, you know, my uncle teaches, and I'm sure it'll be easy.
Yeah.
So I went and took that class.
How close to this uncle are you?
I'm way closer now. He was always, I mean, he was always like a cool, you know, because he was like theatrical.
Sure, sure.
And he would do for like this funny skit around like the holidays, this like Bethlehem. That side of the family's like more Christmassy than we are. I'm a Jew. But he's like... He would do, like, this Bethlehem, like sketch with, like, toys and everything that was, like, hilarious.
Like at family gatherings or something?
At this family holiday party.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, he would do that, and then, like, my older sister would, like, sing a song, and my grandfather, who, like, he had this beautiful Rat Packy-type voice, would sing, like, Tony Bennett songs and, like, Frank Sinatra songs.
Wow.
And, like, a tuxedo. It was amazing, and like everybody was having, you know, like wine with ice in it because we're kind of like East Portland white trash, if anyone knows, like that side of the, you know what I mean, in the best way, like these wonderful people.
Sure.
And yeah, it was fantastic, and yeah, my uncle would do that thing, and then you know, so I was always fond of him. I always thought he was fun and like better than most uncles.
Well, I'm wondering because that's got to be illegal.
Which one?
Like, taking a class from your fucking
uncle?
Oh,
I know, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's Portland State University, so it's not, they're not... I think their most famous alumni is Courtney Love at this point still.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, so it's not like a great institution. I guess it's a fine school, but like, yeah, I can't, we don't have the same last name, so I think we probably slid by.
He slid under the radar
with
that
but
one.
Then I mean, I loved it, and no one could accuse me of like getting an easy way out because I took that class.
Sure, sure.
And then I loved it. I started, like, I joined an improv group. I took the second level of improv. And then I just went back and, like, TA'd it for the next, like, 2-3 years.
Wow.
Every time. Just because I wanted to be around it so much.
That's
so,
pretty
like,
amazing.
Yeah, I got, like, since I started comedy, I got kind of, like, consumed by comedy. And I try to encounter the rest of the world as much as I can. So I have stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's pretty much just been comedy and girls. Since I started comedy, the girls were, that was a pre-existing condition, but yeah, that's kind of been all of it. Those are like my two consuming interests.
That's it.
Yeah.
No movies. No.
I go see movies. I play video. Oh, I love the NBA. I love NBA basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
And like I play video games every now and then, but mostly to distract me from the other two things.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
I've been finding it very hard to play video games.
I consider myself
a gamer. And now they're so involved. Like, and
yeah.
I love that about them, too, but I don't fucking have time
anymore. With the online games, you have to be, like, a maniac about it. You have to, play it the day it comes out and start getting, like, really good at it.
Well, see, I don't do that.
I don't either.
I can't do that. The kids will murder you.
My dad
And then they'll call you a faggot, too.
They do. They will. They say some of the most deplorable things.
Yeah.
Because they're raised on this internet culture where there's no... They're raised on this internet culture where there's no, like, filters or anything. You know what I mean?
Right.
Just hit it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And you
there's
don't
no consequences,
you don't have
man.
To deal with the immediate consequences. It's terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're consuming. Or, like, a game like Assassin's Creed, which I used to love. Now when I do it, I'm like, this is, like... this is going to end up being 20 hours of pretty much the same activity.
Right.
Like free running around and like occasionally hitting like this button a bunch to punch somebody.
Yeah. But then you can climb a building and jump into a haystack, which is great.
Which is how real life works, too. Right? You can take a 60-story jump off of a cathedral.
It's so much like real life.
Just like real life. I mean, it's like, why am I not out parkouring all over the place and jumping off buildings?
Oh, my God. Well, it kind of makes you want to, right?
It really does. Yeah. Luckily, my carriage prevents that from even being a possibility. But, I don't really play video games even that much anymore. And I used to love smoking weed, and even my passion for that is starting to run out.
Whoa, dude.
Yeah, I know.
Whoa. Yeah.
I'm kind of worried about it.
You're growing up.
I used to love it. Yeah, I turned 30 in October.
Ooh.
Which seems
like... That's like a big threshold.
It is a big
threshold. Coming out of your 20s and hitting your 30s. I'm 34 now.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a big deal.
Were there things that you felt like you had to stop doing as you approached it? And did you pick them back up afterwards when you're like, oh, life isn't that different?
Like a week later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm 30. It feels exactly like 29.
Right.
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 And so, of course, I'm going to keep doing these things. I used to think, and like I still like to think, that I don't let it affect my mentality, knowing that like 30 is right on the horizon.
Sure, sure.
But my behavior is telling me different. Like I've spent a lot of time recently thinking about like the nature of success and like adulthood just in general. And I'm from Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a city, and there's a lot of cities like that. I'm sure there's areas of Seattle, but Portland almost as a whole, like, is a city that encourages
not doing it.
And kind of being like hedonistic, and I don't mean in a sexual way, but just sort of like pursuing.
Well, there are a lot of strip clubs.
There are a ton. Yeah, absolutely
there
are.
Yeah.
But like just pursuing like immediate pleasures.
Sure.
And like, are they going to hear that song that came on in the background?
Oh, yeah.
I kind of hope so. That's amazing.
Totally.
Do you want me to close that door up there?
Or? Yeah, I might.
Let me go close that.
Oh, you going to close it?
Yeah, I'll go close it.
Okay. You just closed the door.
So I just closed the door. Portland is like kind of a city that will like let you be 29 forever. Is basically what I'm saying. And I felt a weird pressure like being that it lets you pursue like immediate happiness like however you want without like a lot of thought about the future.
Right.
And that's beautiful in a lot of ways. It allows like cool types of people to exist there. You can just run like a small like bookbinding place if you want to, or make like artisanal terrariums.
Yeah.
Or do whatever the hell you want. And like you can open shops and that can be like your living. You know, you're not going to have enough money to retire on it. But your whole life, you know, like Portlandia is almost kind of like a retirement anyway.
Oh, sure, sure.
And that's exciting and it's a cool place to exist and it's very fertile creatively. But it gets kind of depressing almost seeing.
Like I said, when we weren't recording,
yeah.
it was You're searching for that next step, right?
Yeah. I mean, you want that next step? Yeah.
In the profession that you're in,
yeah.
Like you have to take the next step, right?
You have to take the next step. Plus, like, I mean, I think what we also said we accidentally weren't recording is like I'm an accomplishment
I'm
junkie.
So sorry, that's
it's
so
totally
embarrassing.
I was late. I'm a schmuck. This is not your fault at all. I'm an accomplishment junkie. I don't know if other stand-ups are, but I like need it. I need like to get that next thing. To sort of do a condensed version of what I said earlier, you know, like, well, here this explains it. Like, I did Conan earlier this
year.
Yes,
yeah.
And when I got Conan, I got it on, like, a Friday. I was flying up to Portland for my mom's birthday. And, like, they were like, can you do it on Monday? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. So I was so excited all weekend, like, running sets, getting stoked for it. And then we taped it on Monday and didn't air till a Wednesday.
Yeah.
So I got to be excited for that whole time. But after it aired, all the excitement was gone. And there was no more, like, sense of accomplishment from it. It was like,
you
okay.
Still weren't, how long were you riding high off of that, though?
I still got, like, a few days out of it, you know? But, like, after it aired, it was like, well, it's over. And not like, I'll never do that again, but, like, you've done it. You did Conan. It was exciting. And I try to be mindful and grateful and try to remember, like, the feeling of having done it. It felt amazing, you know, standing up there on stage and hearing Conan laugh. That's, like, super amazing. But, like, the accomplishment was immediately gone.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, any vindication I no longer felt. Because then it just felt like, okay, well, what's the next late night set? You know?
Yeah.
Now let's get one on network TV.
Well, how did you come across getting that? How did the Conan thing?
I did Just for Laughs in Montreal.
Okay.
The summer before. And you know, everybody's there. And, like, I think JP Buck, who's the booker of Conan, kind of knew who I was from before. Because I would take a lot of trips to L.A. And I started like sending him sets and was get his feedback from it.
Yeah.
And
so you're planting the seed.
Planting the seed, yeah. And, like, you know, you're kind of working on it and you start to get jokes where you're like, okay, this is short and punchy. And you start to feel like, okay, maybe this is a TV set. He sent me an email offering me a set on the Pete Holmes show. He was like, I sent him a set.
That comes with that. You're there. You're sitting there with Pete for the whole episode.
Yeah.
Too,
and then you do. And then you do some stand up. And I love Pete. Pete is super. He is
a super nice guy.
Super nice guy. Yeah, so funny. And I consider him a friend.
Uh-huh.
And I love him and everything. But I don't know if this seems ungrateful or whatever. I really wanted, like, my first late night set. I wanted to do Conan. You know,
you wanted to come out with a bang.
I wanted to come out with a bang. I don't know what this sounds
totally,
like.
It's totally understandable.
I wanted to be the type of comedian whose first late night set was like a big, good late night set.
Sure,
I wanted to set my trajectory like that way. I wanted to be Conan. I wanted to kill on Conan. You know?
Is that for personal reasons or is that because it looks really good on, like, you know, a quote unquote resume?
I think like a little bit of both. You want to be conscious of the resume because that's going to let you do cooler things in the future. You know, maybe you'll get to do cooler festivals or you'll get, like, asked to, you know, or I mean, Hollywood is such a superficial place that they'll like want to have a meeting with you or like spend more money on you or something like that.
Yeah.
And then for personal reasons too, I wanted, you know, Pete is fantastic. And if that show was still around and it was, I thought it was a funny show.
I thought it was a fucking great
show.
Yeah,
I thought it was
great.
And
those bits that he did on, the skits that he did on those are so funny.
He's so fucking funny.
I know.
Yeah. And all those other people on the show, like Matt McCarthy, just so funny. And like Chris Thayer wrote on there and he's great. But I would have loved to do it, but like I grew up watching Conan. And I knew he was a Simpsons writer, and I wouldn't have a sense of humor if it wasn't for the Simpsons.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean? Like it's a show that, like, raised me and my friends, and, like, I wanted it to be there for that reason, too. And, like, when you do the stand-up, you hear Conan laughing behind you, and you hear Andy laughing.
Yeah.
And, that's an incomparable feeling. You get giddy.
How did you not fucking... You come across to me as a guy that shares my sentiments for like emotionality.
Yeah.
Like I would have a hard time. I'm not a stand up. Mm. I've done stuff like that, just hosting gigs and stuff like that. But you know, nothing compared to what you're doing. But if I were standing up there and Conan and Andy fucking Richter were snickering or laughing at the jokes I was telling, I would just break down and cry.
I kind of wanted to, you know what I mean? You feel it's like a, there's like a hurricane of emotions happening inside of you. And hopefully the dominant one is like, stay focused, stay focused.
Yeah.
You know, you've drilled that set so many times and you kind of almost, I didn't go into robot mode, which I feel great about because you can do that sometimes during sets.
Oh, sure.
I stayed like kind of present, but like, I wanted to almost like flip around and just smile at him. Like, you're laughing at me? You think I'm funny? Like even a little bit?
You know what, though?
In the moment?
That would have been fucking hilarious.
That would have been great. Yeah. That would have been a good moment.
Like, you like that, huh? Yeah, okay.
But it is such a beautiful feeling. And like that, I still, you know, hold dear and will think about sometimes.
Sure.
But that sense of accomplishment was gone the next day. You know, it was like on to the next one.
Yeah.
And
so what is the next one? What's the next goal for you, man?
Well, I want to do another late night set soon.
Yeah.
And I would love to do, I want to do a Comedy Central half hour. I just want to get it out there. I just want
sure.
I'm proud of the stuff I'm writing right now and the jokes and that's a cool benchmark.
Yeah.
Cause all my favorite comics have done it and I want to do that, and I'm recording my first album in February in Portland.
Awesome.
So I'm stoked to do that on Kill Rockstars Records.
No way.
Yeah.
Kurt Braunholer was up in Seattle doing his, man, and I got to talk to him while he was doing it. I had such an awkward interaction with him.
With Kurt?
Yeah, because we got done talking, and he started breaking these hard-boiled eggs.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't know it was for his bit.
Yeah.
And I had just eaten a bunch of hard-boiled eggs earlier.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to do a low-carb thing.
Absolutely.
Trying to get my beef castle.
I love
together,
that term.
You know?
I say beef castle all the time.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Hey, high five.
Hell yeah. All right. It's the best way to describe the human body.
So
especially
I go over
a girthy
to him,
one.
And I'm trying to like be like, hey, I'm your equal.
Yeah.
I just ate a bunch of those earlier. And he looks over at me and goes, huh. And he like gives me this look like are you joking or something?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. He's not exactly sure what you're doing with it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, have a great show. downstairs. And then I'm watching his set. And, of course, he breaks out.
Right,
those,
and you're like,
and that's
oh,
his.
Okay.
I can't remember what he said about it. But that is his shame food or something like that.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And I was just like, oh, motherfucker.
That's so funny. That's so funny. Kurt, oh, he's a great guy, too.
He's a sweetheart.
Sweetheart. I opened for him on the Portland. He recorded in Seattle and Portland.
Yeah.
I opened for him in the Portland ones. But, yeah, it's fucking Kill Rockstar. It's like me.
Dude, they're doing.
Hari Kondabalu and Cameron Esposito so far.
Oh, they did Hari's.
And, yeah, and Kurt.
Okay. Yeah. And Cameron Esposito. Nice.
Espo, which comes out soon, I think.
Yeah.
Or if it hasn't already. So cop that. But, yeah, it's cool. They're like a Portland-based record label, and they came to me, and like I was like, hell yeah. Are you kidding me?
Wait a minute.
Absolutely.
I thought Kill Rockstars was like Olympia.
They're in Portland now. They started Olympia
they
way back in like the Riot Girl days.
Yeah, sure.
And now they're like down in Portland,
okay.
Portia and
I'm
Ben
thinking of
those people.
I get them K records
lots
mixed
people,
up.
Even
time.
I do,
yeah.
They're like the I think Slater Kinney, Elliot Smith.
Yep. Yeah, totally.
The Thermals, early stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, great record label, and it's really cool to see like those indie music labels actually putting out comedy.
Yeah,
because they see there's a market for it now, man.
The thing that there's a market for it. They were telling me they sell like more comedy stuff than a lot of their music.
Yeah,
because people steal music, and for some reason still kind of feel like buying comedy.
Yeah,
or it's harder to steal comedy, but like because nobody's posting it because it's not as popular. But the way they talk about comedy is like Portia, you know, who's around for like big waves of music, like, you know, like the Riot Girl and like indie rock and all that stuff. And she's like, comedy right now reminds her of punk rock.
Of
what it was doing, which I think is so cool. Like people like helping each other shows, you know, and like there's like a real positive sort of vibe just around comedy in general now.
Oh, yeah.
Which is so nice because I remember growing up and like especially when you hear like people like Mark Maron talk about it, you know, it seems like it was like a very backbitey, bitter world. And now, like, I mean, I'm not saying this just, you know, because you're recording. There's not one comedian who I don't really get along with.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about because I do listen to WTF quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I love hearing the stories behind like some of the big acts and stuff like that. And it's super, super interesting. But it does feel like, I mean, back in the day, 80s, 70s to 80s to 90s.
Yeah.
There was the big kind of comedy bust.
Like, yes,
nothing
the bubble,
was happening at all. And then everybody's fucking vying for the same shit.
Yeah.
Right? But now, like, you, yourself, Kurt, all these guys that I've had on this show, and people like Kumail Nanjiani and stuff.
I love
like,
Kumail.
Just so they're so, such nice people.
He's like, so nice. Him and his wife, Emily, is so nice. They're such good people. It's full of good people right now. I don't know exactly how to attribute it, but maybe like the bust kind of chased out a lot of the people who were just doing it for the money because there's like, I mean, you can make really good money doing comedy and like, especially doing like things that are tangential to sort of
stand-up.
Well,
you got to be into writing, right? You got
to
get
right.
into
you have
the
to
writing.
Write. That's how I made, that's how I made any money. It's like writing, you have to do that. You have to pitch shows, maybe sell shows. Some people can make money on the road. You can definitely make a living on the road, but you have to be on the road a lot. But like, I think like there's not those big development deals.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not trying to turn, for the most part, I think, try to turn you into a star like right off the bat.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's like a ton of ego, and I think there's a lot of people who are in it because they love it. Because they have to do stand-up, and you know, there's a kinship when you're, like, in a world full of those people. And, like, the people who are, like, Kanane is such a nice fucking guy. Matt Bronger, such a nice guy. Fortune Feimster, like, these people who are, you know, Jen Kirkman, who are up there, are, like, good, nice people.
Yeah.
And they're, like, the role models. You want to emulate them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't see people being an asshole, so it's not, like... It's not like a vicious cycle either. Yeah,
right. Exactly.
Well, and maybe that's why it's working so well right now too, because we are in another comedy boom. Would you say that's true?
I think something like a boom. It's definitely more popular, but I don't know if I don't. I think it may be.
Is it just more? It's more available. Maybe.
It's more available, and I think that in so many different ways.
Yeah.
You know, with podcasts and like channels like IFC, which are doing kind of more like niche programming. Uh-huh. And stuff like that. Like, a boom almost makes it seem like ABC's, like, splattering stand-ups across the lineup. And all you know, and all the, and, like, and like clubs are, like, flying out features again. And that shit's not happening. I don't know how much more America at large, or in general, I should say, is, like, into stand-up more than previously. But the people who are into stand-up are getting more into stand-up.
And they're consuming more
stand-up.
Yeah.
I think the availability or the opportunity to be passionate about it and to be a real big fan is so much greater than it's ever been.
Right.
And there's so many and you can like a punk rock band, you can be a certain type of comedian and build a devoted following of people who want to hear what you have to say.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be like a red meat peddler so much, you know, and just talk about like, here's a joke making fun of black people, and here's this one about my bitch wife, you know, just so you can make fucking idiots who are tired from the end of their job laugh.
Yeah.
You can actually be kind of thoughtful, you know, as a comedian, and not that, you know, I don't mean to talk shit about, like, those red meat comedians either, because, fuck, they serve a purpose, and God bless them for going out there and, like, making that kind of person laugh who needs to have that kind of joke to be, you know, to laugh. It's just nice that that's not the only way to sort of have a career.
To
sort of like play to the middle too hard.
So how are things going for you? You're kind of a regular on Chelsea Lately.
Right.
Now,
well,
right?
Which is now deceased. I was I wrote on it.
I didn't know that.
It's been off the air for 3 weeks. Chelsea just kind of got tired of it.
Really?
And didn't like working for E. I was a writer on the show for the last year.
Okay.
And a panelist. Yeah. Regular panelist, and would do sketches and stuff. But for the last, I think for about 3 weeks, it's been off the air.
Oh, no shit, man.
2 weeks.
Sorry to dig a fork into
open
wound.
No, it's not an open wound at all. It was a great opportunity.
Yeah.
Truth be told, when I first took the, you know, like, Chelsea is a very specific kind of humor.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like very pop culture oriented.
Yeah.
The TV show was. And that was never my bag. But, like, it was a cool job with cool people working at it. Had it stayed on the air in perpetuity, I probably only would have done it for 2 years or so anyway.
Yeah.
Although the money's so good that it kind of traps you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And like you're a writer. I'm in the Writers Guild now because of it. So I have health insurance and like dental.
Nice.
Which is amazing. Yeah.
What happened the first time you went back to the dentist?
Well,
how long had it been since you went to the dentist?
I haven't been back. I never went. Because I had to go to, you know, because you have to go to work every day all of a sudden. And on the breaks, I would go do stand-up or I'd go back up to Portland.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So I have the opportunity. So if there's a catastrophe, I'm good. But
dude, can I give you a little piece of wisdom?
Yeah.
Coming from a 34-year-old to almost a 30-year-old.
Yeah.
You got to go to the dentist.
I know, man. I got to go.
You got to fucking go to the dentist.
I know I have
it
to go.
It sucks, but find a dentist that does nitrous and you'll be fine.
Yeah, good call.
You'll be fine.
I'm sure I have
Because they're going to fucking wrench the shit out of your mouth.
They're going to be like, you haven't been in 8 years?
Yeah.
All right, fuck you. Here we're going to. Yeah. I know it's going to be like that. I know.
Yeah.
And I know I have to go. Now when I go back, I'm going to work with Chelsea. She's going to Netflix.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, she signed a contract with Netflix. So I'm going to go help her develop this next stuff starting like in October.
Can we talk about that? Is she planning on doing like an actual like sitcom show? Or what?
Like a kind of like another talk show. But still, I mean, we're like blank slate right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is as I guess this all depends on whether the contract goes through.
Sure.
But the plan is to go. They've asked me to come help figure out like she's doing like four like kind of almost like documentary comedy type things where she like throws herself into these worlds. Like, I don't know how much I can say about them, but like throws herself into these worlds she has no knowledge of and kind of like explores them and learns about them. And like that's what the format of the documentary is. And I'm going to help on a couple of those. And then I don't know if I'm going to help on the talk show part, but like, it's cool because it's, you know, it's there. So I go back to work.
Yeah.
And in between, I should make a dentist appointment. But I go to Toronto on like Wednesday. So there's like no time because I filled it up with all this road work. I'm fucked.
There's one thing I've always wanted to do to my dentist.
Yeah.
Is whenever they tell you that, like, man, you got to keep on flossing.
Yeah.
You know, you got to floss more because I don't fucking floss.
Yeah.
Nobody flosses. Nobody flosses.
Nobody flosses.
It's not a thing that people do.
Yeah.
Right? But. Like, I line up I make a dentist appointment, right?
Yeah.
And then a week prior, or like
flossing.
two weeks prior, I start flossing like mad. I'm flossing like 3-4 times a day.
Yeah.
You know, getting it out because I don't want it to hurt so bad.
Right.
When I go in.
Digging around in there.
Yeah. But it always fucking hurts
of
when
course.
I go into that, when I go, and it always bleeds no matter what.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what.
Like
even once, like a couple of years ago, I flossed for like 2 months before I went to the dentist. Still fucking bled when I went into the dentist. Such a lie, dude. It's like, it's chemtrails.
Right. Yeah. Because dentists know that nobody floss. So that's how they cover up all that like blood they pull out of your mouth.
Yeah,
it's because you don't floss.
Yeah, right.
Well, I floss every day. Now what?
No, it's because you have shaky nicotine hands.
Yeah.
And you're poking my gums, man.
Pushing around up there with those like medieval torture implements. Yeah. That'd be funny. You should. You should go to the dentist, floss for a year straight. Document your experience and then confront your dentist.
That would be a great documentary.
That would be great, yeah.
Right?
Maybe that's what we'll do on Netflix.
It'd be 5 minutes long. It would be a great documentary.
But definitely worth a year of work. Of floss.
I think we got something.
Yeah.
I think we can work
on
this.
Yeah, let's develop it. Yeah.
I'll give you a dollar to write it for me.
I will. It'll take about a minute, so that's perfect. Yeah.
So what's coming up for you, man? What's the next goal?
I want to, you know.
I know that you said you want to go back on the do a nightly show.
Yeah.
Again, but
well, I want to do more stand up. I want to, you know, in the last year writing on Chelsea, stand up kind of took a backseat to the writing because it's a comedy job, you know, but it takes a lot of your creative energy. And even she's amazing and would give us like plenty of time to go off and like, you know, do shows on the road and stuff like that. And I don't know what people think of Chelsea Handler, but like, she's a fucking amazing boss. She's just like super generous with her money. And hires cool stand-ups. Like, I worked with Jen Kirkman,
yeah,
and like Chris Frangiola, who's super funny, and Fortune was there when I got there, and like all these other amazing comedians. But anyway, like I wanna make stand-up like my number one priority again,
because it's
my favorite thing to do. Okay, cool. It's like my favorite thing to do on the planet, so I wanna like kind of put that back on the front burner.
Sure.
Work towards getting that half hour and like make sure when I put my album out, it's like a good out. You know, because when I put my album out, I want it to be a good fucking out. I want it to be like when Kanane put out Death at the Party, or when like Pete put his album out, or when like Bronger, you know, when they put that first album out, it was like, holy shit. It's like, it would be so cool if one day like anything I made meant as much to a young comedian as like Kanane's album or Bronger or Pete, you know, or like their albums like meant to me as a young comedian.
Yeah.
And that would be so fucking cool. You know,
that's pretty great, man.
Yeah. I would love if like anything like that could happen. And I want to make sure that I do everything I can. You know, I want to do my part. Like, make sure, like, these bits are good and, like, it flows well and it's got a good energy to it. And I'm talking about the shit I really want to talk about so other comedians can be like, oh, I don't have to talk about X, Y, Z. This is the stuff I'm interested in. That's what I want to talk about.
Well, that's great.
So that's the main focus, man. Like, this is kind of a cool career in that you never know what's around the corner.
Sure.
You know,
well, it's got to be kind of a scary one because of that, too.
It is kind of scary, but it's still, I mean, it's pretty, it's more cool than it is scary.
Yeah.
It has definitely the potential to be scary because you're like, where am I getting my next meal from? But once you start to realize, oh, I can, you know, I can make a living. I'm never going to be homeless, you know, unless I start fucking up really bad. I can do comedy for a job. And like, I'm kind of there. I'm kind of feeling like, okay, I can do this for a job.
Yeah.
And then it's thrilling. It's thrilling. I just helped Neil Brennan, like, write a commercial for something. That's amazing. And I had no idea that was happening until a couple days before it happened. Uh-huh. And then I got to work with fucking Neil Brennan, you know, the guy who co-created Chappelle's Show, which too many people talk about. Such a funny stand-up comedian in his own right.
Yeah,
and
just he's
such
great.
A funny fucking writer. And another cool dude. Yeah, man. So, like, I just want to, like, almost the goal is to stay in the game as long as you can and keep getting those weird opportunities.
Totally.
Because you never know what the next one's going to be. It could be something amazing, you know? Yeah. So I just want to stay in the game, I guess.
I like that, Ian.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think you're doing a great job, man. And I'm a big fan. And
Thank you.
Well, there you have it, folks. There you have it. The one, the only, Ian Carmel. Great, great, fantastic dude. And man, did he kill it that night. Totally killed it. Along with a couple of such great comedians from the Northwest here. Sean Jordan from Portland, Oregon, came up and did some sets with Ian that night. And same with this girl, Monica. Monica, I can't remember her last name, but she absolutely killed it. She's from Seattle. And everybody did a fantastic job, man. And my friend Shelby Earle was there. And we just hung out in the green room and had some beers after the show. And it was fantastic. Fantastic. Good human beings. Good human beings. Okay, so iancarmel.com is where you can find Ian. And you can there's links to follow him on Twitter as well there. And to find out about upcoming shows that Ian will be at. I think he does a lot in L.A. because that's where he lives now. So make sure you follow him, man. And check out some shows with him because he is fucking hilarious. And he's so good at what he does. And he's just a fantastic human being. Just the type of person that you want to see a lot of success happen to. And that is definitely happening for Ian right now. Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll be back next week with a great, great musician, Corey Duncan of the band Au Pairs. And man, do we have some, oh my God, we got some amazing stuff for the rest of this month. October coming up, guys. October, God, Au Pairs we got. Pinback, you know, the band Pinback. Yeah. We've got interviews with Lynn Shelton, movie director Lynn Shelton, and director of television like Mad Men and New Girl, and what's that one? The Mindy Kaling Project, along with these awesome new movie Laggies that's coming out. And we'll talk to Lynn about all this stuff that she went through getting into making movies, and it is a phenomenal story. So tune in, man. Tune in, drop out, whatever that saying is. You're going to love it. The Air Raid podcast coming up this month, man. It is full of great stuff. Next week, Au Pairs. Okay, let's see. Where do we go? We need to plug the other stuff, right? Go to our website, www.air-raid.net. And click on the Archives tab, and you can check out all 215 episodes with Pete Holmes, Mike Birbiglia, how about Mudhoney's Mark Arm, or Death Cab for Cutie's Chris Walla, Or how about, let's see, President of the United States of America's Chris Ballew. Hi, God, man, Macklemore. I'm trying to, Eddie Pepitone, Pete Holmes. Did I already say Pete Holmes? I probably did. It's all there, folks. It's all there. Duncan Trussell. I mean, come on. It's all there. Hari Kondabolu. Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Steve Runazizi. Ah, man, it's all there for your listening pleasure, all for free. Stream it from the website, www.air-raid.net. Check it out. We hope you enjoy it. Okay. Okay, that's it. That's it. Follow us on Twitter, at airraidnet. Do that. We're now on Elo, too. You can find me at Roden. Okay. Timeless Melody by The Laws, and we'll be back next week with more Air Raid podcast for your ears, folks. Thanks for listening. Have a good one.